Welcome, everybody, to news briefing where we're going to be talking about fluid milk initiatives and dairy promotion. So with us today here at the joint annual meeting of the National Dairy Board and the United Dairy Industry Association, National Milk Producers Federation, we have Paul Robey, who is the chairman of DMI, as well as a dairy farmer from Arizona, and Tom Gallagher, the chief executive officer of DMI. And so we'll get started very quickly, but I also wanted to let you know that we have three journalists on site with us as well, gathered around our table here. So we have Bill Baker from Dairyline Radio, we have Matt Gould from Dairy Market Analyst, as well as Alyssa Mitchell from Cheese Market News. So you may be hearing some questions from them, as well as questions that you'll be prompted to ask us at the close of the remarks. So we're going to start it off first with remarks from Tom Gallagher about the Fluid Milk Initiative.
All right, great. Thanks, everybody, for being on the line and here in person. You know, we've completed today really a two-year journey that the dairy farmers asked us to pursue. 2 years ago, Paul Robey, the chairman of DMI, and other dairy farmers said, look, this is 40 years of decline. There's been a fair amount of activity, but no real results over the years, you know, great advertising and other things. But, you know, the fundamental flaws of the industry continue to exist, which we highlighted with innovation and product and package, not a lot of brand marketing and other factors, but fundamentally the investment in the plant infrastructure to allow the industry to produce the kind of things that consumers who have moved away from eating at home and consumers overseas. There's an enormous market in China for fluid milk. We've documented through our U.S. Dairy Export Council at least 1.3 billion pounds overseas in China as an opportunity for U.S. dairy industry. So with that in mind, understanding that fundamentally change hadn't occurred, the farmers said, let's go talk to companies and see who's willing to invest and if they're willing to invest in the right things. If it's just a small incremental change, then, you know, maybe we won't participate. But we did find, as we interviewed over 50 companies, that there were several companies who were very interested in trying to tap into what is an enormous potential in the fluid business, we believe. And many of those were cooperatives. Today we've announced partnerships with seven companies, including Dairy Gold Northwest Dairy Association, the Kroger Company, which is a vertically integrated retailer, Maryland and Virginia Milk Producers Cooperative, Shamrock Farms, Southeast Milk Incorporated, Dairy Farmers of America, and a joint venture called Fair Life between Select Cooperative and Coca-Cola Company. So these partners that, as we considered working with each of them, we really paid attention to what kind of commitment they would make to things like infrastructure, new plant, add-on lines. And what we found is that these companies are willing to invest over the next several years, and we're not going to give the specifics in each company case because of, you know, it's proprietary. But in excess of $500 million in, you know, the next few years. And that covers mostly infrastructure and plant development and the like. Some included in there is also brand marketing activities and otherwise. And so we wanted to be supportive of the industry in trying to reignite this entire category. And so what our participation is in this is varies by each partner. Some partners really were looking more towards what kind of consumer information we might be able to provide. Can we help with product development through our centers? Can we help with nutrition consultancy, which several other partners that we work with ask us for? Can we help with health professional relationships or, you know, a testing of products? So each partnership is different. Each was looking for different things out of us. But I think the farmers are really excited about this because this is a very unique and large investment in a category that has really not seen innovation for 40 years of any real magnitude. So I think that's why the dairy farmers are excited.
Let's hear from Paul Roby about, say, the dairy farmer perspective on the initiative.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Myself, as well as all the rest of our dairy farmers on the board, and basically every other dairy farmer I talk to is really excited about this opportunity of reigniting fluid milk. You know, we didn't lose all these fluid sales in a day. We won't get them back all in a day. It's going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of hard work. But I am really excited about the diversity, the areas that these companies are moving into to try to help themselves as well as us to increase fluid milk sales. It's following in the same footsteps as our other partnerships where we're working with and through these companies. They're carrying the majority of the load. We're providing what the things Tom had referenced, you know, research and the like, and so that it helps to spark that, put a catalyst to driving some fluid milk sales to help get that. It's a tremendous investment by these other companies. I serve as the chairman of our co-op as well, and I think that through this, other companies other than what we're dealing with here will also start looking at it and say, hey, you know what, we can have a piece of that if we just would do that. Again, it's the catalyst. It's kind of helping to drive interest in fluid milk, interest in the market, and I think that's what we'll see a tremendous amount of reinvigorating the fluid category. So every farmer I've talked to has been really excited about the possibility of us investing and looking into fluid milk, and I think it's just a great opportunity for us.
Okay, that's wonderful. So, operator, if you would, maybe you could cue people up as far as anybody having any questions of either Tom or Paul. And while you're doing that, for any of the journalists in the room, would you guys have any questions of Tom or Paul at this point?
And at this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad.
Okay, Bill Baker, go ahead.
What a question. You mentioned plant development. Is there specifics as far as, are there any new plants in the works? Or?
Yeah, there's several, and some have already been constructed since we started this project. And so that is public information. I think you know about Shamrock out east building a plant. There's a plant that's been built in this joint venture between Select and Coke up in Michigan, Coopersville, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And these are enormous. Some of these are absolutely state-of-the-art, world-class, and they're phenomenal. So, yes, it's already begun the process of either adding lines or putting shovels in the ground.
Operator, do you have questions from anyone on the phone?
Yes, your first question comes from Jim Dickwell of Daily Today magazine.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I wonder if you could give some examples of some of the new products that we might be seeing coming on the line.
I'll say a couple of things. First of all, again, I can't, identify specifics, but you're going to see the products that will be put out there are going to be both ESL and shelf-stable products. They're going to be smaller bottle generally. And there is a product already that's been in test markets, past test, and is going to launch nationally that was discussed today at the annual meeting with National Milk Producers Federation. It's the Fair Life product, and what they're going to do is put a product out there that has more protein, is lactose-free, is more calcium, and less calories, less sugar. And again, this product's been tested in the marketplace and done very well to raise the boat of the entire category in the two markets that it was tested in. So So that's one product that's about to launch nationally. And remember, that will have the full weight of the Minute Maid, which is part of the joint venture underneath Coke, chilled distribution system, which includes 15,000 folks working through the Coke system, going into retail each and every day. So that's one example of a product. There are going to be a number of other products, you know, 100% milk or milk and juice based, and some other things that we can't discuss. But as we get to do those, Jim and everybody on the line, as the companies are ready to make those announcements, I think we should just keep everybody informed with a pipeline as they come out. And then, you know, go ahead.
Just one follow-up. Can you give us some idea of the dairy checkoff investment involved in this effort?
Yeah, like I said, the total on the partner side over the next several years is over in excess of $500 million. And that's, to me, really on the light side. And as we see this go over the next year, we'll report even, I think, a larger number. Our total is over multiple years. In some cases, it's a two-year relationship. In some cases, it's 3 years or 3.5 years. And it totals in gross among all seven, $30 million roughly.
Okay, thanks.
Operator, do we have additional questions on the line?
Yes, your next question comes from Jim Massey of County Today.
Good afternoon. I guess I was just curious how long these partnerships are for. You said that some over 2 or 3 years, or do you expect this to be a several-year project, 5, 6 years, or what are you thinking?
You know, I think changing the beverage category or changing dairy's place in the beverage category and getting back the spot that we had 40 years ago that competition didn't take from us, we let go away. I think that's a long haul. But these relationships right now are like all our other partnerships that we have with a McDonald's or a Domino's or whoever. They're 2 to 3 years. And what the intention is that they're catalytic and they ignite others to do similar things. And so as each partnership comes up every year, we look at the results. And as the partnership comes up for renewal, if we're going to renew, then we'll evaluate, has it done all the things we'd hoped it would do? Is it still catalytic? Or have we done, you know, our part of this, and now the brands need to really carry this? And I before Paul jumps in on anything here, I also want to say that's key to this thing is generic promotion has, through MilkPEP and in the past DMI and CMAB out in California, we have had year after year of world award-winning advertising back in the 90s, and consumption was dropping like a rock. So it's not about generic doing advertising. In fact, the more generic advertising we do, the more we disincent the brands from doing it. And the brands in this case really have understood they need to be brands. They need to market as brands. And, you know, a company like Coca-Cola getting in this with Fairlife and Select, they're not going into it to be a commodity, okay? They're going into it to bring every ounce of marketing smart, financial muscle, and people at the store level. And the other benefit of having companies like Coke or these other folks who are developing brands that, you know, are listed here is it's people going into stores who will be carrying messages about how farmers treat their animals because they're going to get asked. We were at the sales meeting for some of these groups, and they asked Paul, you know, how do we answer how farmers treat their cows? What's the difference between organic and conventional, right, et cetera? So I see this not just as wonderful for trying to ignite fluid. I see it as a real opportunity to have people in the store talking to the real people at retail making decisions.
I agree, Tom, that's going to be one of the big benefits there as we reignite this thing and we start getting more feet on the ground. we will have those people out there helping us to sell not only the dairy products, but also to sell us as dairy farmers and our dairy practices and the good things that we do. And I guess I want to speak to the time frames. You know, we've had partnerships in the past that we've fulfilled the agreement, done the job, and then we don't continue them. We've had a number of these partnerships that we've renewed because we continue to look for new ways of helping to drive the category whichever one we have, whether it was cheese or whether it was with McDonald's or any of those. So it's really each one as it develops and as we go down the road. So I'd say they are for some fixed term for now, but whenever they come up for new renewal, we look at ways that is there new ways to further develop those or to continue them, or have we done the job and we're stopping?
Matt Gould from here at Grapevine. So,
yeah, you mentioned that the investment is going to be shelf stable products. Is the goal to Is it going to be more of an intention domestically to turn around sales, or are we going to be looking to export markets?
That's an interesting question. First of all, let me clarify. It's ESL, extended shelf life, is what we're seeing most people invest in, or if they can go all the way to shelf stable, they're doing that. There's very few we've ever even talked to in the last 2 years who are looking at a fresh fluid plant. But the intention of some of these partners, and you could probably look at the list and decide who that is really focused domestically. There's others who, you know, have an international reach. You know, you've seen some of these companies announce deals in China. And we think China, because, like I said, the 1.3 billion pounds that our U.S. Dairy Export Council company did that, you know, identify what the opportunity there is, we think that is maybe even on the low end. So, I mean, if you think about some of the other relationships we had with quick-serve restaurant chains like McDonald's and others, as that relationship moves forward with McDonald's or other brands that are very big in China, other quick-serve restaurants, milk and other dairy products coming from the U.S. is a great opportunity. So it's going to be both. And some companies will be in both spaces, and some companies only domestically.
Operator, are there more questions in the queue?
Yes, your next question comes from Jim Harper of Dairy Foods.
Yeah, hi. It's Jim Carper. Seems like every journalist is named Jim or Dave. But my question is, why focus on fluid milk sales? As you noted, they've been in decline for 40 years. That would tell me Americans don't want fluid milk. Couldn't you make more of an impact by promoting milk sales to yogurt processors and cheese processors?
You know, can I?
Go ahead, Tom.
We're both excited about that question. You know, I think if you look at the last 5 years, Jim, what we've done with domestic cheese is phenomenal. You know, it's a story that's often lost because we put all the domestic numbers together. But the domestic sales of cheese, in particular, other than American cheese, which is the pizza efforts that we've had and the efforts we've had with quick serve restaurants, are almost equal shoulder to shoulder with our export numbers. So we are doing everything we can to continue to grow the cheese business. But, you know, if you think about fluid milk, most of us believe, and obviously these board of directors at Coca-Cola and all these other companies really believe with this kind of investment, that it's not that Americans don't want fluid milk. It's they're getting what they want, where they want it from somebody else, and it could have been fluid milk. And again, it may not always be 100% fluid milk, but we gave this business away, and shame on us as an industry. We didn't do the innovative things. You know, we had a speaker today who said, how many of you were buying gallon and half gallon milk in the 80s, and everyone raises their hand, and then how many are still buying it predominantly that way today, and everyone raises their hand. You ask that same question about any other product line or technology, and that's a different answer. We didn't tend to our knitting, and that market is there. You're looking at companies like Coke and Pepsi-Cola and others who see that opportunity as their growth platform because we didn't do the job. Thank goodness they're willing to step into the category.
And just from the farmer side of the equation, I guess I want to say we haven't left and stopped doing all the other things that we're doing at DMI. In fact, a lot of times it just overwhelms myself and the board of all the different facets and the super exciting stuff we're doing there. We're just taking and saying, hey, there's an opportunity, a huge opportunity in Fluid, and we're focusing on it, but we're not stopping all the rest of the aspects of it. And I think if most farmers around the country would have a relationship to Fluid milk that is somehow ingrained in us, and so it also is an aspect of that people feel good. It does help dairy farmers to feel good about how their checkoff dollar is spent, and so we need to spend it wisely. We're spending it with our partners and getting a tremendous bang for our buck in this aspect, but it's not that we're leaving all the rest of the stuff and just only focusing on this. We will continue the majority of all the rest of our programs.
Operator, do you have more questions in the queue?
Yes, your next question comes from Brian Baxter of Midwest AG Report.
Yeah, I'm curious as to how fast do you think we may start to see some of these things roll out, and I guess how eager are the partners to work with dairy farmers and start to make some things happen?
The first thing you'll see roll out, as I mentioned, is this Fair Life product, which is already in some markets, but their plan is for a national launch by the end of the year or early into next year. I can't nail down that date exactly today. And they're all very eager to, A, get in the Fluid business and fluid-based drink business. It's the health and wellness and beverage category is the fastest growing category there is. They all want to be part of it. And several of these companies don't have the kind of product development or consumer insights that DMI, through the Farmer Funded Checkoff, has. So they're incredibly eager to work with us, even if it's just to get nutritional consultancy, nutrition relationships, and product development understanding.
Would you guys want to mention anything about, say, dairy research centers or any of that those assets that the Checkoff has?
Well, our dairy research centers and product development expertise, not just to these partners, but any dairy companies, we're here to support and grow innovation. So that doesn't require a formal partnership, but it is something. We have 95 PhDs between the centers and national staff employed, many of whom are focused on product development and innovation.
I feel that's one of our strong points in our program is being able to lend a hand to any of the dairy companies around the country as to any type of research or information that they need. I think that's one of our real key strong points.
Operator, further questions in the queue?
Yes, the next question comes from Sarah Muirhead of Feedstuff.
Good afternoon. My question is these are some very exciting things. How is DMI going to measure the success of these partnerships?
Okay. Well, first thing did the partners deliver what they said they'd deliver? So have they introduced the kind of products and number of products over the next year and time frame they said they would? Did they invest the kind of brand marketing dollars if they're trying to develop a brand? And ultimately, the measure is, did it work? You know, did we increase gross sales? And I think we all know that if these seven partners over the next 3 years introduce, let's just pretend, 20 products, maybe four or five of those are home runs. That would be a pretty good hit ratio, actually. So in the end, it's got to be, when we look at the end of these partnerships, did it move the needle? Did it change things? In the meantime, we will use process measures of did everybody deliver what they said they'd deliver.
So So when you say move the needle, you're talking about the fluid market.
Yeah, fluid sales. And, you know, I think your question is interesting because, you know, the white gallon being so such a commodity over the years, made it such a commodity and really marketed based on price, and is an interesting story because a lot of years people thought, well, fluid isn't responsive to price because economists told us it wasn't, you know, it was inelastic, meaning it wasn't as price responsive as other beverages. The problem is the price swings have been 10 and 15 and 20%. So you take 10 and 15 and 20% and then you multiply that into the factor of price inelasticity, and we have huge elasticity. And, you know, what you've seen in the last 4 years where we're down 3.6 billion pounds or so, you've seen huge swings in price in a very bad economy. And we've seen at the lower economic levels a drop of 6, 7, and 8%. So what my hope is that this not only ignites innovation, but that the kind of innovation, which will probably be in smaller bottles, like the Fairlife Project is in 52-ounce and 11.5-ounce, we've got to grow the business there faster and in other venues like quick-serve restaurants through milk-based coffee drinks, where we've seen an increase of almost 1 billion pounds of fluid milk sold in quick-serve restaurants over the last 5 years through coffee. We've got to see those grow faster than the gallon's been declining in order to see per capita go up. So the one thing I'm confident in is not that equation, I think we'll see, is that at the end of this period of these different product offerings, we're going to have more people reaching out and touching and having a product experience. So, but they'll be smaller bottles. So we've got to get more smaller bottles than we might loosen or solidify the loss in the gallon.
Have you set specific targets?
You know,
targets for the market?
Right now, what we're looking at, rather than say, okay, here's our gross target for overall sales, is we're looking at each company, and as they introduce a product, like, so for Fairlife, they've shown us their projections over the next 5 years of what they believe they can do and what their targets are. And as each other company puts products online, we'll look at their financials and their estimates. And right now, we haven't, as a board, tried to say, well, our goal is to grow the business by 5% or 4%. We think that's probably would be a little naive on our part. We really need to see each project and look at it. So, you know, I'd love to be able to sit here and say, in the next 3 years, our goal is to grow the business 5%. Our goal is to work with these partners to take the business as far as it can go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sarah. Good question. Ed, other questions in the queue, operator?
Yes, your next question comes from Bob Meyer of Browfield Egg News.
Hi, gentlemen. Wondering where you anticipate the growth is going to come from. If I look at the beverage market right now, we've seen a big growth in the energy drinks especially, and Monster and Red Bull really control that market. Is that where you think these companies are going, or are there new markets to be developed? Where will the growth come from?
All right. Well, you know, while Paul's thinking about his answer to it, I'll just say let's take a look at, again, the Fairlife Project because it's already one I can talk about. That target market is the imitation beverages. It's the soy, the almond, the coconut. And in the test market, it really pulled from there. So bringing people back to dairy is one of the goals that we have, and Fairlife is one of the projects that is intended to do that. Markets will, you know, or other companies will, again, look at small bottle, and I think they'll look at school. As I mentioned several times, they're going to look at China and then some places south of our border. We think there's an enormous opportunity in, you know, some of the ethnic markets. The Hispanic market is well underserved. So, you know, I think it cuts all across, and it's really about what's the venue and what's the exact taste profile that particular market wants.
But
one thing in the Fairlife tests, it predominantly pulled from those imitation ones and didn't pull from the white gallon as significantly as it pulled from all the rest of them. So it's going to be taking back some of that portion of it and bringing. And the other thing that they noticed was it not only brought up their results were good for that specific product, but in those markets it brought up the white gallon actually, because it brought them back to the category. They were looking and they were looking for beverages and food, and they said, hey, you know what, I'm also going to get a gallon of milk as well. So it helped the whole milk category, not just their specific product. So and what that is replacing, I guess we'll find out over time. But I think we're going to bring some excitement back to the fluid category in all respects.
Another area is universities. Athletic departments at universities are clamoring more and more for chocolate milk, and then some enhanced milk with more protein and you know, all the great carb balances. And in fact, that's such an attractive venue to us right now. We've been working with the NCAA Athletic Association to see if we can do something more broadly. Several of the athletic directors really like our Fuel Up the Play 60 program, which has increased milk consumption at school breakfast by 160 million pounds in the last couple of years. And, you know, so some of that, we want to work with the athletic directors to engage them in Fuel Up the Play 60, but also to bring more chocolate milk and more milk-based drinks, not just into the athletic department for the student-athletes, which has worked at schools like Notre Dame and Northwestern and other places, but to bring it then to all the other venues that it can possibly go within the university setting.
Thank you.
Yeah, good question, Bob. Okay, other questions on the phone?
Yes, you do have a follow-up question from Jim Dickrell of Dairy Today magazine.
Yeah, thank you. You know, conspicuous in your by their absence in your list of partners is Dean Foods. Is that just a lack of innovation on their part, or do you just see, you know, the whole gallons as kind of you know, not a category that can be growing?
No, you know, I think, Jim, that whether it's Dean Foods or any number of other processors, you know, we had a feel like we could get to a critical mass, but there's only so many companies we can ultimately partner with at one time. So these seem to be the best seven right now. Could be any others in the future. But I think the white gallon, one of the commitments we've talked to each of these companies about that we're partnering with is we need to rethink the at-home volume. Maybe it's a gallon, maybe it's something bigger, maybe it's something smaller, but people are eating different at home and preparing foods differently. So we don't have the magic answer for how to increase at-home consumption in a country where fewer and fewer people are eating meals together at home. But that is, you know, one of our intentions is to bring these partners collectively together to say, okay, where can we go here? How can we solve this solution together? Because that's going to always be the commodity part of the business, and I think a lot of these companies would look at that with, if you excuse the expression, a trustee mentality. Whereas, okay, you know, the commodity part of the business, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, a lot of these companies aren't going to want to compete in, but they do see that it can serve as a base to increase the value-added volume.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great. Operator, we have time for just one more question. So is there one final question that someone has?
Yes, you have one last follow-up question from Jim Harper of Dairy Foods.
Yeah, hi, Jim Carper at Dairy Foods. With this initiative, do you expect to bring new consumers into the milk fluid milk category, or do you expect just existing milk drinkers to buy more milk?
No, we can't continue to live off those who are drinking milk today. We have to bring people back, and we have to keep people in the category. You know, the grim reality is that essentially, you know, if you take it by math, one out of every two individuals over the age of 18 don't drink any fluid milk. Okay, now, we can't have that. We're not going to grow this business with that kind of statistic. So we've got to change school milk for real. We've got to bring more alternatives, these small bottles and different venues and different fun packages and different fun flavors to the younger people. We've got to continue our Fuel at the Place 60 program to teach the value of fluid milk and the nutrition of milk. And then as they move through the teen years and then get off on their own, we've got to have something for them at every life stage that is relevant to them. And then we can bring more people back to the category and keep people in the category longer. Some of the products we have tested have done just that. They've appealed to those folks, as I said earlier, that are drinking the imitation beverages, and we think that's a big deal.
Great. Paul Rovey, any closing comments from a dairy farmer's perspective?
The only thing I'm really excited about these opportunities. I've watched the seven partnerships that we have developed, and I just think that we're going to be on a really nice road, and in a few years we'll have some really good results to tell about fluid milk. I'm very optimistic.
And I would just say that I appreciate everybody who's here and on the phone listening in on this, because I know that there's going to be a lot of skepticism about whether this category can turn around. And, you know, I hear it all the time, can this really happen? But what I'm going to do is I'm going to say this. I'm going to say these companies who are investing this kind of money are pretty smart companies. They're pretty sophisticated. And they're not getting this in this business to lose money. And when you have the likes of a Coke getting into it and some of the other big companies with the kind of marketing muscle that they have behind it, I believe you're going to see a change. And so I'd ask people to be patient, because we didn't get here in 1 year. We got here in 40 years. And it's not going to get solved in 1 or 2 or 3 years. It's going to get solved over multiple years. But hopefully we'll start to see the progress.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot for your tremendous interest in the topic and the great questions you guys had. And if you need more information from us, just let me know, and we'll get it out to you as soon as possible. So I hope you have a great afternoon and the rest of the week. And with that, we're signing off. Thanks.